Thank you, Bob Kessler. John Williams here until 3 o'clock. How are you today, Mr. K? Good?
I'm doing great.
Well, do you watch rested? The TV shows? Are you? That's good. Yeah. Is that worth noting? Do you not normally get a good night's rest?
No, I normally do, but for whatever reason today, that's just the first thing that popped into my head.
Well, I hope you have a more interesting weekend than that, Bob, if the highlight you're well rested.
If I can be well rested, that's all I need. That's it.
Well, you know, that's the building block for a good day, is a good night's rest. I'm about to do a MyPillow commercial, and I don't even do them on this station, but I happen to subscribe to that. Do you watch the TV shows House of Cards or Girls by any chance?
No, I don't watch those. I've been doing the OJ thing, but not House of Cards.
Oh, gosh, yeah. How is that working out? I've been meaning to kind of – I watched the first episode, and I really wanted to get into it. I didn't. How's that going for
it's
you?
It's really good.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I'm glad.
You kind of have to – you can't not see it's John Travolta playing an equally famous guy or not equally famous, but another famous guy.
Yeah.
He does a great job. David Schwimmer, you know, very impressive.
Well, that was the one that was hard for a lot of us. Yeah. You go, wait a minute, where's Monica? What's happening here? And then you get past that, and that's what you do with shows. You know, I've been watching House of Cards, and that's another one where at least you have to make a leap of acceptance. You're going to say, okay, this is preposterous. Even in this political season, House of Cards this season is nuts. But it's pretty good if you're willing to go down that road with it. I bring all of that up now to say this. In our Vibe Score segment at the end of the show, we will ask you, we'll talk about how various things are vibing, what score on a scale of 1 to 100 people are giving them. So we'll be talking about Ted Cruz. We'll be talking about TV shows. It's a whole host of things going on in the world around you. You get to score these things on our app called Vibe Score. If you don't have it, download it right now. It's free. Vibe Score is one word. And then score House of Cards or Girls, which are both doing pretty well on that app. Folks seem to like those. But you can also comment on Ted Cruz's comments and Donald Trump's behavior. In fact, I want to talk about that just briefly here. And then we'll let the Mincing Rascals handle it in depth after 1:30. But to get there, I think we should start with Robert Bentley, who is the governor of Alabama. And he had an interesting week, too, didn't he? Did you follow that story this week? Here's the sitting governor of Alabama. He's an older guy. He had been married 50 years when his wife a couple of years ago left him. And folks thought, oh, that's weird. 50 years and she walks out on you. What happened? There were rumors that he might have been having an affair. And an audio tape surfaced this week. And it sounds pretty clear that he's talking to another woman and he's talking very suggestively about physical contact they've had and how much he enjoys it. You know how that audio was created? His wife suspected him. And so she said, hey, I'm going to go for a walk. She puts her phone down on the counter and hits record. And when she comes back, she captured him as soon as she left for her walk. He picked up the phone, called his girlfriend, said, hubba, 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 hubba. She has that on her phone. She left him. Now the audio has surfaced, and he's very embarrassed about it. So in order to explain that to people, he said this.
I have never had a physical affair with Mrs. Mason. I can assure the people of Alabama that as their governor, I have never done anything illegal.
Well, good for him. But when you go down that road, you got to be careful not to sound like...
But I want to say one thing to the American people. I want you to listen to me. I'm going to say this again. I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false.
What a shame that most of us know that speech by heart. So if you sound a little bit like Clinton, you know that maybe you need to tweak your speech a little bit. But I think that was the biggest problem. When he was talking to the people of his state about the fact that even though it sure sounds like he was having an affair, he didn't have an affair and he sure didn't do anything illegal. If you're going to give that speech, it needs to be well crafted. And it was anything but.
It was a period of time. I really can't say exactly the length of time, but it was over. I don't want to say a period of months. I'm not going to say that because I'm just saying that it was a period of time in my life that I have made inappropriate comments.
Right.
Boings
especially
were added
since,
later.
No, actually, there was a guy there with a mouth harp anticipating his stumbling. Particularly since when there's opportunity to say something great, in my mind, I go to the American president. You know, that very liberal Michael Douglas speech as President Andrew Shepard when he is defending his actions and those of his girlfriend, Sydney. And so I went back and listened to that just a little bit this week.
America isn't easy. America is advanced citizenship. You've got to want it bad because it's going to put up a fight. I've known Bob Rumson for years, and I've been operating under the assumption that the reason Bob devotes so much time and energy to shouting at the rain was that he simply didn't get it. Well, I was wrong. Bob's problem isn't that he doesn't get it. Bob's problem is that he can't sell it. We have serious problems to solve, and we need serious people to solve them. And whatever your particular problem is, I promise you, Bob Rumson is not the least bit interested in solving it. He is interested in two things, and two things only: making you afraid of it and telling you who's to blame for it. That, ladies and gentlemen, is how you win elections. You gather a group of middle-aged, middle-class, middle-income voters who remember with longing an easier time, and you talk to them about family and American values and character. And you wave an old photo of the president's girlfriend, and you scream about patriotism. You tell them she's to blame for their lot in life. And you go on television, and you call her a whore. Sydney Ellen Wade has done nothing to you, Bob. She has done nothing but put herself through school, represent the interests of public school teachers, and lobby for the safety of our natural resources. You want a character to debate, Bob? You better stick with me, because Sydney Ellen Wade is way out of your league.
That speech, I think, resonates in many ways even today, doesn't it? Which gets you to the Donald Trump-Ted Cruz controversy. Earlier in the week, they were arguing about whose wife is pretty and is not pretty, and then it devolved into whether or not Ted Cruz has had a series of affairs over the years. But Cruz was good this week, I thought. I mean, cinematic. The guy's a good actor, and I mean that in a sincere way. When he wants to say something, it's his old Princeton debate days. He can be animated. He can be physical. He never bobbles his words. You can just see him when he's defending his wife, almost channeling President Andrew Shepard.
I don't get angry often, but you mess with my wife, you mess with my kids, that'll do it every time. Donald, you're a sniveling coward, and leave Heidi the hell alone.
Once again, awesome that they had an orchestra there.
The Copeland-esque swells.
I mean, you know, I want that as an app on my phone so that whenever I say something that I feel is really awesome, you know, I'll just hit the button. And I'll drop the mic and walk out, you know, that sort of thing. That wasn't the only line, though, that he played, I thought, particularly well.
Real men don't try to bully women. It's an action of a small and petty man who is intimidated by strong women. Heidi is my best friend in the whole world. She is the love of my life. And Donald should stick with attacking me because Heidi is way out of Donald Trump's league.
All right, thank you very much. So you get it. I mean, that was Andrew Shepard all over again, and Cruz nailed it each time.
They both said out of your league, right? So
I know. It's like you better come at me because she's better than you. She's better than both of us. I love her. She's the love of my life.
I wonder if Aaron Sorkin has a case. Ted Cruz, you took some of my ideas, and because he wrote that movie.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. No, I mean, some of this has the look and feel of it. A lot of people moving around quickly, chattering clever things with the orchestra waiting in the wings. Hey, I'm going to be in the wings for a show next weekend. Mark Baser is going to be able to launch a brand new locally produced television show. Mark Baser, the stand-up comic and commentator, he does that interview show at The Hideout, and they're turning that, I believe, into its own television program. And Mark has asked me to help him launch the show. What we're going to do is going to be fun. We'll both tell you about that next on WGN. Mark Baser joins us once again here on WGN Radio. How are you, my friend Mark?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Where are you? Florida or something?
I am at the baggage claim in Florida. Yeah.
Oh, the one I love going to the baggage claim in Florida. That's
awesome.
Yeah,
we're going to just get – we're just checking out the bags, and then we're going to go home.
By the way, I'm going to be flying next weekend. What is it like getting through a major airport these days?
Well, you know what? No taking off the shoes. No taking out the computers from the bag. Pretty fine. Pretty good.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. I mean,
I
want the airports to be safe.
Although I will
safe.
Say this. My 5-year-old was picked out for a random screening. So
really?
Yeah. So we had to wait around for a while they examined Theo to make sure he was okay. He checked out all right.
You're not one of those parents that instantly then videotapes that and then posts the video with, you know, all sorts of subtitles about how you and your child were assaulted or offended by the whole process?
No, I understand. It's random. I did see a funny photo of Jeff Tweedy from Wilco, that his wife took, they must be on some kind of break, being screened at the airport. So that was, I felt like Jeff Tweedy and my son went through the exact same experience this morning.
You've kind of bonded with him. Well, speaking of name dropping and celebrities,
I didn't name drop there. I mean, I saw a photo of him. It wasn't like I was hanging out. I'm not on vacation with Jeff Tweedy.
Hey, take it if you can get it, Mark. I mean, you know, that's what we do. We, in any way we can, sort of saddle up to these famous. I saw a photo of Jeff Tweedy. It doesn't make me his friend.
I saw a photo of Barack Obama.
I interviewed Barack Obama one time, and I had no idea what I had, you know, because when I interviewed him, he wasn't Barack Obama yet, you know. If I could go back, I would do that. I would do that interview differently. I would ask him questions about Supreme Court justice, you know, nominations. Years. Just what if? Say you were the president.
Yeah. What's your take on Syria?
Exactly. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about why we're talking, and that is that.
Yeah.
A, I enjoy your company, but B, Friday night at the Hideout, where you have for. A few years now.
Eight years? Yeah, 8 years.
Been doing your interview show. You are going to have a launch party for what?
So it's going to be, it's finally turning into, it's always been a live show. I've always loved the live show, but it's turning into a TV series on WTTW. It's debuting, premiering actually on April 8th, but we thought we'd have a party and a viewing party to watch the first episode ahead of time. On April 1st, and you are kind enough, and I'm so excited about it. I can't even tell you, for you to come and interview me on the stage, which will be fun for me because I've always I don't want to go over to the top here, but like I've always kind of modeled what I do in my interview style on a lot of what you do, and you've always been kind of like a model for me there. And so it'll be, it's just going to be like, and you've been on the show, of course, but it's going to be just a real thrill to, I'm a little nervous. Like, I don't know that I'll be interesting, but it'll be a real thrill to sit on the couch and have you sit at the desk and interview me and then watch the show and just have fun and have food. And we're also, it's kind of a fundraiser too. So we're raising some money because we don't have the biggest budget in the world. So that's what it is. And I got to say, it's all because whenever I came on the show, you all were full of praise, but you would also say, like, what is this? What is this show? What medium is it on? And I'd say, well, real life. It's on the real life medium, but now I'm taking it to the even realer medium of television.
Well, that's all nice of you to say, and I'm nervous about not being entertaining enough for you and your audience. I mean, now I have to sort of tweeze
It's just going to be a bundle of nerves. Come see two people, bundle of nerves.
but your interview show always goes more than an hour. How long is your TV show going to be?
It's going to be a half hour, so you're right. The interview show is an hour and a half, but each television show is going to feature two interviews. Instead of, like, usually we have four in a live show. We filmed it at the Hideout, so it's all taken from live shows. We edited the interviews. So it's always – that's always, like, the – I would say one of the biggest challenges for me is thinking, like, okay, what I love about the live show and what I love long-form interviews, interviews that go on for 15, 20 minutes. But I also understand that on TV and other medium, that that's not, like, people don't want to see that. People don't want to watch
that. Wrap it up, Mark. Wrap it up. I don't have time for all of this.
Exactly, exactly. So how can you have a conversation that's short, that's enough that will hold people's attention, but also has substance? And that's the key. So each interview is like 10 minutes long, and I think we do it. Like, we have great guests. We had David Axelrod, the comedian Hannibal Buress, the ESPN host Sarah Spain, who lives in Chicago. Rick Bayless is on the show. So it's like a good – it's a Veronica Roth, who wrote Divergent, the movie Allegiant. She wrote that book that's now out in theaters.
You always get amazing guests. I think that's what actually ticked me off about your show. Not only was it not broadcast, but then you had A-level guests go to the hideout, for crying out loud. I'm like, we're a 50,000-watt clear channel station, okay? We have Jimmy DeCastro. How is it you're getting these people? You got Axelrod and Hannibal Buress.
We have alcohol.
All right, I got to go. We need to wrap this up. When is the show going to be broadcast? When can people watch it?
So it's April 8th is the first show. It's going to be right after Check Please, so it's at 8:30 p.m. Then it's rebroadcast, I believe, Sunday night at 10, and then I believe it's rebroadcast Sunday morning at 4 a.m. So choose whichever one of those times that fits your schedule the best.
And then it's on probably the same night every week?
Yeah, and they show it a bunch, so it's good. It's GGW, so they the great part for me is they do a lot of repeat airing.
Yeah, well, it's I haven't seen it yet. I'm anxious to see this first episode. You and I will talk on.
I sent you the link.
I saw the episode. It's really great. Enjoyed watching it, and I'm looking forward to talking to you on stage Friday night at 7 o'clock. Right, Mark?
Yeah, can you get there a little earlier so we can just...
No, I can't because I have other obligations, but I'll be there around 6:30 or 7 o'clock. We'll talk on the stage a little after 7 o'clock. Is it free and open to the public?
Are we going to not talk off stage? We're just going to talk on stage. That's the only like communication I'm going to have with you that night.
Mark, we're wrapping the interview up now, so what I need to get from you in this part of the conversation is how can people come to this thing?
They can go to hideoutchicago.com, go to the calendar section. It's a fundraiser, so it's $15. We're just, you know, we're doing it on a, it's on TDW, but we're doing it on a, you know, small budget.
Shoestring budget, sure.
Yeah, there's also going to be a silent auction, which I think people are going to hopefully get some good deals. Like, there's dinner, there's like a dinner at a big restaurant, Grace. There's dinner at Big Star. There's Steve James, who directs Hoop Dreams, donated some DVDs.
That's amazing.
Signed,
all right.
A bunch of stuff.
HideoutChicago.com. Go to HideoutChicago.com for details and to get your tickets or whatever you need to do. I'm sure it's all there. Mark, I will see you on Friday night. Thank you for letting me be part of your little show there, man. It'll be fun.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Do join us a week from last night. We'll pause here, update you on the news. Then the Mincing Rascals have a few things to say about this past week in the news on WGN. What a week. I mean, as crazy as the news was, and we say this all the time, you can't imagine it getting crazier. And then it goes ahead and does. I'm thinking about the Ted Cruz, Donald Trump story this week, which just changed in ways I didn't see coming. So let's bring you our Mincing Rascals podcast, which we record every Friday. We did this just yesterday. And you can hear it on my Facebook page. I'm King John there. You can also download it. I'll tell you more about that in just a minute. But the line of the week may have been Steve Bertrand's when he said...
It was a wife fight, not a knife fight.
That's good.
Well, and you know, Donald Trump is being laid sort of on Trump, but it was a super PAC for Ted Cruz that started it with the picture of Melania, and then Trump fought back. But it's... You know, it's remarkable. I was thinking of this. I remember, Eric, I'm sure you remember the line from Bob Dole in 1980, "Stop lying about my record." Remember that? It was to George Bush, and that was a dramatic thing. Bob Dole said, "Stop lying about my record." And the stuff that's going on now, you know, makes any past political fight or sharp word just pale in comparison. They're fighting over wives now, whose wife is hotter, and Donald Trump, or rather Ted Cruz, had... You know, he can't help but look rehearsed, but it looked like this rehearsed sort of indignation to Donald Trump's tweeting about it? I don't know.
Well, if I were Ted Cruz, I would be genuinely indignant about that attack. I mean, it was really, and it's one of those things where, you know, when Trump said this, when Trump starts attacking Heidi Cruz, you think, well, now he's gone too far. And how many times have I said that right. in the last 6 months or last 8 months? Now Ted Cruz,
I think
now,
every Friday.
Now Donald Trump has gone too far. Yeah. This is it. This is the end of his campaign. So. I just kind of...
It's like he did with the Ricketts, Eric, where he says, better be careful, better watch out. He's got the beans that he's going to spill on Heidi Cruz, and we don't know what those are.
Well,
so.
Maybe we do.
It's not Heidi, but it's Ted.
Yeah.
That unconfirmed rumor of cheating on his wife.
That would be the beans on...
I just throw things out there, unsourced, no sources. It used to be in the old days.
I told you he'd be good.
Sources. Now you have no sources. And Eric Zorn taught me everything I know about journalism.
Yeah, but affairs now, that's old news. No one cares about that. You know, we've got all the other things going on, banning Muslims, building walls, an affair, that pales by everything else.
Well, yes, especially since Donald Trump is on, what, his third wife.
Right.
On the other hand, Ted Cruz's whole appeal is to the, you know, evangelical Christians. I mean, he is...
That's not true. Why do you people who are liberals keep saying that? He's a constitutionalist. He's not just evangelical, not just family values. Am I the only person in the media who's fair and balanced?
Well, he's a constitutionalist until it comes to the Supreme Court nominee.
Well, he's a constitutionalist there, too. Just because he's doing – just because the Republicans are doing what the Democrats do, it doesn't make him not a constitutionalist. Biden said he would do this in 1992. So if it happens in 2015 – why is it suddenly different? Am I the only person who sees the world this way?
No, in fact, I pointed out in the column pretty quickly after the death of Scalia, which is that if the shoes were on the other feet, you can be sure that the Democrats would be arguing for delay and the Republicans would be arguing for speed. This is
so
all.
Why don't we get on with it?
Jeff, the point I make about the constitutionalists is, you know, maybe the Democrats would do it or not. Biden spoke as in a hypothetical. The Republicans clearly are doing it now. But my point is that here's a guy who says he's a constitutionalist, and they're sort of denying that it's the constitutional duty and timeline to do it now. That's the issue I have with all of this.
There's nothing in the Constitution that says in that timeline. Read the Constitution. It's only 27 pages. Show me where in the Constitution it says you must do this within a certain time period.
Well, but there is an implicit sense that this has to be done at some point.
Well,
I mean,
yeah,
there is no clock.
Would you folks stop putting things in the Constitution that aren't there?
No, I don't think anyone's saying that it's in the Constitution. I think that it is implicit in the Constitution that what the advice and consent role is not that the person has to meet our political approval. But why is that provision in there, the Constitution? That's why I have to look at what the intent in the Constitution was.
Advice and consent can occur. It can occur after the election as well as before. Why don't we talk about that?
I would rather talk about what's happening this week.
On the scene. Pardon?
Well, give us a chance to breathe here. I'm wondering, I guess, what the impact will be of this National Enquirer story, which is going to roll forward this week, and it is that Ted Cruz has had five different affairs with women who...
Did you say five? Cinco?
Five.
Five. He's
five
a dead mistresses. Man. Okay, I thought it might be one sometime in the past.
Five.
Cinco is
no.
Like
and the pictures
man.
Are... Not only are they pictures... they have the pictures pixelated in the National Enquirer. Others out.
How could this not have come out before? If it were true, don't you think it would have come out before? How could
I don't know, but this is the same magazine / newspaper that also outed Tiger Woods, John Edwards, and Jesse Jackson. So, hey, none of us are here to defend the National Enquirer. I'm just saying they have a track record of getting this sort
also
of thing right.
It's also the same publication that recently did a big cover story on Justice Scalia was murdered. So let's make sure that we keep this in some sort of perspective.
Hey,
but it doesn't matter if it's true, Eric, you know, because you know what's going to happen this week? People are going to talk about this. And now, not that he is playing defense already, but Cruz is going to have to play defense on this issue for who knows how many days. And it's sort of like Donald Trump's calling him lying Ted Cruz. Trump is a master at that. Cruz, by the way, is, along with Donald Trump, the most dishonest of the five remaining candidates. But the fact that he keeps calling him that, it starts to stick. And this association, whether true or not, is now going to follow Cruz, whether he likes it or not.
If it definitely is not true, if it's totally fabricated, I would announce a major lawsuit within one day. And I would try to implicate Donald Trump in it. And I say, let's go on and have a debate and discuss the issues. Or Donald, you come up and and have an early defense to the lawsuit naming you.
They are friends, Trump and the publisher of the National Enquirer.
Are they really? I didn't know that.
Well, yeah. Trump's got friends everywhere.
Trump.
look. I want to just. I want to.
Jeff,
do you? Yeah. What is it again? You do. You have a political talk show.
Political interview show.
Okay. Well, then don't say you guys in the media again, because you're one of the guys in the media too.
Oh no! You're in the mainstream media.
Okay. Anyway, I would like to posit that. Really, every vote cast in the Republican primaries is about Donald Trump. None of them is really about Ted Cruz. So I do think that this might not have that great of an impact on this, because you're either going to vote for Donald Trump or you're going to vote against Donald Trump.
Right, because
Ted Cruz
result
happens
of this,
to be carrying those votes.
What are you going to do, vote for Hillary? No, you're either going to vote for Trump or not, and after that, almost nothing matters. Eric Zorn, you don't think Kasich is going to – there's no path, as they say, for him to presidency?
Not in the primaries. I think he's mathematically eliminated from the 1237. Is that the right number, 1237?
1237.
Yeah, okay. He's mathematically eliminated from that possibility. I think what he's hoping for, and really realistically what Ted Cruz is hoping for, is that this goes to an open convention and Donald Trump does not win on the first ballot. And then there's a big soul-searching moment in the Republican Party, and they said, we cannot nominate this man, Donald Trump, to be our standard-bearer, and so that we'll look to somebody else.
Like Scott Walker.
Well, the question is, do they just give it to the silver medalist, who will almost certainly be Ted Cruz, or do they say, well, even Ted Cruz is damaged goods, he's too far right, and we need to find somebody more like Paul Ryan, who's been my prediction all along.
Yeah,
or,
no kidding.
Or
John Kasich.
Or John Kasich. Kasich beats, I just saw a story, Kasich beats Hillary Clinton. He's the only one of the Republicans who beats Hillary Clinton.
How do you turn to
a
if the guy
has
can,
been.
And I like Kasich, but how do you turn to a guy who's been thumped over and over and over and then say he's going to be your nominee? I don't know how they can do that.
Yeah, but I mean, who's he been thumped by? He's
everyone.
Been thumped by. No, he hasn't been. He's been thumped by that percentage of people who respond to Republican surveys.
I know.
And if he was only being thumped by left-handers, Steve, do you think he would still have a shot in a general election?
No, I think he has a shot, John.
Yes.
No. My point isn't that he has. I think he has the best shot. But I'm saying, if you're running a party and the guy, I don't know how you can turn to the guy who comes in third. After he's only won one or maybe two or three states. I don't know how, as a party, you can pick that guy. I think you would have to go outside.
Point well made, Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio. That voice on the phone was Jeff Berkowitz, who was filling in for Kristen McQuarrie. Thank you, Jeff, and Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune as well. Boy, all of that talk about that stuff, you just get so much anxiety. You get so tense. I was lying in bed the other night trying not to think about the election and the 1,237 delegates that one of the Republican candidates will need to get in order to be their candidate. 1,237. I was doing a Sudoku puzzle, and I finally put the thing down and turned and looked at my clock. It was 1,237. I thought, great. I turned out the light. A really funny, interesting story about Steph Curry's shoes. Can you believe this? Let me tell you that in a minute on WGN. It's 12:53 on WCCO. My nephew's Christmas present. Oh, shoot. Is that the first time I've done that, Griff? I was doing so well, too. It's WGN, isn't
Wait,
it?
Wait, let me check, because you might be right. Let me just take a look. we are WGN. That's right.
Okay. I've actually got a sign here that says that to remind me. So here's the story. I just think this is so interesting. It was in the Washington Post the other day. It's a story about Steph Curry, and I kind of had my radar up because I went to see the Warriors play a game last week, and it was a good game. But Steph Curry was on my mind. It says, Steph Curry is an honest-to-goodness phenomenon, but unlike other basketball players in that exalted class, LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, he's not wearing Nike. Have you noticed? Curry is an Under Armour man. How did the world's biggest shoe company, which accounts for 96% of basketball sneakers sold, let the NBA's most ascendant star slip through its fingers? ESPN's Ethan Sherwood-Strauss answers that question in a fascinating interesting story that went up Wednesday. In short, Nike lost Curry because he got lazy, while Under Armour hungrily scrapped around the margins. At one time, Curry was among Nike's stable of stars, but his deal with the company was up after the 2012-13 season, a year in which he set the NBA season record for made three-pointers and helped lead the Golden State Warriors to just their second playoff berth in 19 seasons. He was on the rise. But apparently Nike thought he still belonged in their second tier. The two sides gathered at a Bay Area hotel so Nike could give its re-up pitch, which evoked, according to ESPN, something hastily thrown together by a hungover college student. They wrote, the pitch meeting, according to Steph's father, Dell, who was present, kicked off with one Nike official accidentally addressing Steph as Stefan, the moniker, of course, of Steve Urkel's alter ego in Family Matters. I've heard some people mispronounce his name before, Curry said. I wasn't surprised. I was surprised I didn't get a correction. It got worse from there. A PowerPoint slide featured Kevin Durant's name, presumably left on by accident, presumably residual from repurposed materials. I stopped paying attention after that, Del Curry says. Nike also didn't give his son a summer basketball camp of his own, like it did for Kyrie Irving and Anthony Davis. This meant a lot to Curry, who had fond memories of attending Chris Paul's camp as a youngster. Curry spent weeks weighing his decision. Under Armour had made the canny, fairly lucky move of latching on with seldom-used Warrior swingman Kent Bazemore, one of Curry's closest friends on the team. The company showered Bazemore with product, even though he was barely seeing the court. Curry saw that and pondered the possibilities. In the end, Curry and his family, including his young, famous daughter Riley, gathered at his agent's house in Southern California to make the final decision. Before him were examples of all of the options available to him, shoes from Nike, Adidas, and Under Armour. At this point, Riley is a little over 1 year old. She's presented with a Nike sneaker, an Adidas sneaker, and an Under Armour sneaker. She picks up shoe one, which was a Nike, threw it over her shoulder, Curry says. Then she picks up shoe two, threw it over her shoulder. She picked up the third shoe, walked over and handed it to me, he said. It was the Under Armour Anatomic Spawn. That's the name of the shoe. So I knew right then, Curry says, smiling. Under Armour was offering him a deal worth less than $4 million a year. Under the terms of their previous deal, Nike had the option to match it, and Nike passed. Three all-star berths, one MVP, and one NBA title later, Curry is the league's most visible star. Last month, Morgan Stanley analysts told Business Insider that Curry's potential worth to Under Armour is now valued at $14 billion. That's with a B. I know I got the call letters wrong a second ago, but that says $14 billion. Let's pause and get you updated on WGN Radio News. Then we'll talk to Jane Kirtley, who is an expert on media. I want her to put a couple of stories in perspective to us. Is it news or not is the question. Our Vibe Score segment and the boys from the beat all coming up on WGN. When I started at WGN like 20 years ago, I had come from a radio station, Bob, called WMBD in Peoria.
I remember.
And I was there, and then I was in Minnesota, and then I came anyway to Chicago. But I was getting my call letters wrong, and the late, great Bob Collins made a great big sign that said WGN and put it in front of me. And he said, just look at this when you need to do the call. Don't trust your brain or your memory. Just look at this sign. So I'm looking at a sign in my studio here. It says WGN. So I opened up my mouth and said something else.
I used to
work. Did that happen?
I worked with somebody and at a radio station where I worked. It was the Smooth Jazz station. And it was very important that the call letters were said in a certain way. And to coach the talent, one guy I worked with said, say it as though you're reading it off your paycheck.
Oh, that's nice. That's a nice little way to remember. Go ahead and give me your Smooth Jazz call letters.
I wasn't on the air there, so I would just be imitating. I was a writer-producer, you know. But, yeah, it was a Smooth Jazz.
Well, there you go.
5, yeah.
Good for you. All of a sudden, I'm chill. I'm following a couple of stories this week which just make me scratch my head about the business of journalism. Speaking of that, one was the Hulk Hogan story versus Gawker, and now the National Enquirer, and at what distance should all of we hold this topic? We reached out to Jane Kirtley, who is the director of the Silas Center, where they study media and our association with it. She's been on with us before. Jane, welcome back. You're on WGN. How are you?
I'm great, John. Thanks.
Let's just do it chronologically, the Hulk Hogan story. I think what jumped out at a lot of us first was the amount, you know, like $140 million. If you thought the Aaron Andrews settlement was a lot, all of a sudden you see that and you thought, really, was he injured that amount, or is that how much we need to suppress a scandal sheet like Gawker? What's your reaction to that story, Jane?
Well, you know, for me, there are a lot of issues here. And I want to start by saying that I'm not necessarily endorsing Gawker's editorial choices, but I don't believe for a second that what Hulk Hogan was suing about was his hurt feelings. I think he was suing about the fact that he really likes to exploit himself, he likes to exploit his own materials, and he doesn't like somebody else doing it. So to me, this is about money. And, I mean, there's nothing wrong with suing for, you know, copyright or trademark infringement or something like that. But I resent that it was cloaked as a privacy claim, because I think there are legitimate privacy cases out there. I just don't think his is one of them. As far as the amount is concerned, of course, it's huge. We haven't really seen huge judgments like this against the news media since the 1990s. My guess would be that no matter what else would happen on appeal, the amount would probably be reduced. The case itself may be overturned. That it's a little hard to predict at this point.
I think, though, maybe the media is evolving. Certainly the technology is, and our interface with it is evolving. And maybe it's time for a judgment like this, though. Maybe it's time to push back, you know, on behalf of people who are aggrieved. He might not be the most sympathetic, you know, plaintiff. But to be honest with you, I was a little cheered when I first heard about this settlement, this award.
Well, of course, it wasn't a settlement. I mean, I wish
award.
It had been, in a way.
Yeah.
Then Gawker could have made this go away, and we wouldn't have to worry about a court decision. To me, there's a huge difference between this case and the Aaron Andrews case. That was a situation where, you know, she was not complicit. She was not trying to exploit this. She was simply sued for what I think was a legitimate claim for invasion of privacy. Hulk Hogan voluntarily went on TMZ and he went on Howard Stern show to talk about this tape. So it's just, again, it's really hard for me to see this as anything other than an issue of, I want to control this information about me. I don't want somebody else to make money off of it. And I say that not, again, because I think Gawker makes these wonderful editorial choices, but the underlying principle here is, who's going to control information about public figures? There's no dispute that Hulk Hogan is a public figure and that he's made his sex life a matter of public debate and discussion. You know, there's some speculation that this case is really all about another tape that Gawker has of him making racist remarks, and that that's really what he wanted to discourage the publication of. And if that's true, I think that tells us a lot about how public figures want to be able to control their images by suppressing reporting about them. Is this the best case to make that principle? Probably not. But, you know, the history of First Amendment law is often made with very unsympathetic defendants. The Hustler magazine case with Jerry Falwell is a great example of that. It went on to become one of the most important free speech cases we have in the United States. And yet, who are we talking about? Larry Flint and Hustler magazine.
Well, then how do you explain this? How do you explain that the jury awarded him compensatory damages, Jane, of $115 million? That was more than $100 million more than he sought. They gave him more than the $100 million than he sought. They gave him $115 million. Perhaps I'm reading now from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, because enough is never enough when it comes to hurt feelings. Of that, $55 million was for economic harm and $60 million for emotional distress. Then they tacked on $25 million in punitive damages.
Right. And, you know, and this is the kind of jury verdict that is made for what we call independent appellate review. This is what an appeals court will look at and try to determine whether there's actually any legal basis for the conclusion that the jury reached. Now, you know, they get to make the factual determination. I'm not disputing that. But to try to decide whether this award is justified under the law is something that appeals courts get to do. And historically, huge judgments like this do tend to be reduced on appeal. If I had to bet, and it's dangerous to predict things like this, I would say his economic harm component of the verdict might survive. It might get reduced somewhat. But again, because he exploits his own image and does have an economic interest in that, there may be a basis for that award. The other stuff, though, I think is really disproportionate. And frankly, if you want to ask me why this happened, I think that part of it is that Hulk Hogan is a local boy. He's a businessman, an entrepreneur in the Tampa Bay area. And what I've also noticed over the years is sometimes juries vent their anger at the news media against whoever's the most convenient defendant, and in this case it happens to be Gawker. I also think that in privacy cases, juries tend to identify with the plaintiff because, especially these days when everybody is on Facebook or other forms of social media, I think there's always a little concern that some of the things that might have been recorded about you or photos taken might end up there, too. So it's odd as it seems, it's probably easier for a jury to identify with somebody like Hulk Hogan than might be the case in a kind of a classic libel suit.
Is the possibility that Ted Cruz had a series of affairs newsworthy?
You know, I am so appalled by the level of discourse in this current presidential campaign that I'm kind of left aghast as it keeps developing. Let me speak generally and not specifically about Cruz's situation to say that I think that to the extent that candidates for elective office choose to make their families and their family values one of their qualifications for office, then I think it is fair game to report if there is a disconnect between what they're representing and what the reality is. I'm not saying that's what's happened in Ted Cruz's case. I'm just saying that as a general proposition, it seems to me if you choose to run on family values, then you have to expect that people are going to question whether you really adhere to those values. Ted Cruz has used his family in his campaign, and so I think that the question is a legitimate question. The sourcing on this story seems a little bit suspect to me. I would be concerned about just the ability of being able to verify what is being reported, and I don't think trafficking and scandal mongering is contributing to public understanding or the ability to make good choices in the election.
Yeah, but go back to your first point. It's germane maybe if somebody's running on family values, if in fact they've compromised theirs. At least that'll matter to some people. And the National Enquirer says that's what's happened here. Newsweek and Time, just for instance, have been watching their coverage of it. They don't have that story. And it appears as though they're not even trying to get that story. The story they're reporting on now is the fact that the Enquirer is saying that, and now there's a battle between Trump and Cruz over the possibility that Donald Trump planted the story. So
right.
they get to sort of have some arm's distance. They're covering it, but not really, you know, sullying themselves with it yet.
And, you know, I hate that particular dodge, which is what I think it is. And this is something we talk about in, you know, media law classes. If you're repeating a libel, you are as guilty of the libel as the first person that said it. But I've heard so many journalists say, oh, but it's being reported elsewhere, so of course we can't ignore it. We have to report it. And we'll take a slightly different angle. We'll look at it from the standpoint of the other stories the National Enquirer has broken, the nature of their reporting in general, blah, 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 and that makes us pure. And of course it doesn't make them pure. And I'd rather they just tackled it head on, or that they did what increasingly seems impossible for news organizations to do, which is to just say flat out, we don't think there's a story here and we're not going to report it.
So when I go to Time.com looking for what's the latest on this, you would prefer there be absolutely no mention of it, with the exception of Time's very own reporting on the validity of those accusations.
Yes, that's exactly what I would prefer to see. I mean, I'll qualify that by saying that I suppose Time and many other news organizations, you know, have a media column and they like to report generally on what the news media are doing. But I would much prefer to see it in the context of saying, here's what we ourselves have been able to report. Because these are damaging allegations. They're important allegations, at least, as you said, to some people. If they're true, they could be devastating to this campaign. And again, if they're true, I think there's a legitimate basis to cover this story. But, you know, notwithstanding the fact that the National Enquirer has broken some important stories over the year, the apparent conflict of interest that they may have with their publisher's relationship with Donald Trump and so forth would suggest that they're probably not your first recourse for credible reporting on a topic like this.
Yeah, but they are good at this topic. I mean, they've done this to Tiger Woods and Jesse Jackson, the Reverend, and they've done it to John Edwards, who was running for president. I mean, this is in their wheelhouse. You got to give them that, Jim.
It is, and I admit that. You know, a lot of them were trained in either England or Australia and trafficking in, you know, the sexual activities of politicians is one of the things that they're very good at reporting on, if you care about those sort of things. And, of course, that just reopens the entire debate of whether we should care. For me, again, it comes down to a question of what's the nature of this candidate. If it's someone who's never held themselves up as a model of moral rectitude, then I'm not sure it really matters, other than for the perennial kind of security question of who are you dallying with and are there blackmail potentials or other kinds of potential. And those are legitimate lines of inquiry, but I'm not sure we're quite there yet.
Let me pause for just a second. We'll put you on hold, Jane, and then pick it up. We'll wrap up this conversation in just a couple of minutes. Jane Kirtley is the director of the Scylla Center. She obviously reports on the intersection of media, law, you, and me. So I'm just asking you at 312-981-7200, is this a story that the journalists, the Chicago Tribune, should be delving into, should be going after? Do you want to know, or do you want them all to look the other way? What's your answer to that? We'll pick it up here in a minute on GN. We're wrapping up a conversation with Jane Kirtley, who is the director of the Scylla Center. They understand or study media, the law, and how you and I have to react to these things these days. We've been talking about the, I don't know, validity of the newsworthiness of the Ted Cruz story, whether or not he's had several affairs, and then Donald Trump. This whole thing, I guess, sort of got started, right, when a group that was aligning itself with Ted Cruz ran an ad in Utah, which had the picture of the scantily clad Melania Trump, and they said, do you want this to be your first lady? If not, vote for Ted Cruz. I'm not sure that's a slam dunk, to be honest with you. But then Trump got into it and posted an unflattering picture of Ted Cruz's wife. And then lo and behold, as that's all going back and forth, we get this scandal story of the fact that maybe Cruz has been having an affair, which has led some people to think, isn't this fun, Jane? Which has led some people to think that maybe it was Trump that planted the story. You can just see how any of us, smart people, journalists even, which is not me, would start to connect those dots, would get sucked into that game. Jane, I have to tell you, I'm a little intrigued by all of that.
Well, it is intriguing. And, of course, the practice of, you know, nefarious, backhanded messaging about political opponents is certainly nothing new. It goes back at least to the 19th century in the United States. We just haven't seen quite such a mud fest, I think, for a while. Attacking spouses like this, I think, is, again, I think of Andrew Jackson, you know, as an example of a political spouse who was herself impugned, and that was used as a political ploy. And I don't know how most people feel about it. I think it's out of bounds myself. You know, unless
really?
There's some clear reason. I mean, you know, just attacking a spouse because of her physical appearance or something like that, again, it just seems to me to be unseemly and very difficult to justify from a newsworthiness perspective. But I agree with you that what is really intriguing about this is who is really planting these ads, who is really making these allegations. Of course, my own view would be that to the extent that Trump and Cruz are in a position to formally, you know, disavow them and to say, I had nothing to do with it, that would be the appropriate thing to do. But we get these kind of half-hearted repudiations, or the idea that, well, it's a group that's, you know, supports me, but I have nothing to do with the ads they choose to place. That's just nonsense. And I think, you know, these guys need to step up to the plate and take responsibility, or to be very clear that this is not something that they endorse.
And, you know, it's exhausting, too. If this is Cruz and Trump, imagine what it will sound like and be like if it were Hillary Clinton and her advocates going against, say, Donald Trump in a general election. I think all of us will join you overseas, Jane. We'll just say, I'll just skip this one and go to Europe or someplace. I don't know where. Canada.
Well, I'm
wherever.
Having a very difficult time explaining all this to my students here where I'm teaching in Europe, because many of them are from former Soviet bloc countries. They see the United States as this great shining beacon, and they don't understand this, and I can't explain it to them either, other than to say that this is the rough and tumble of American politics. I keep thinking it's going to sort itself out, but it hasn't quite done that yet, so we'll have to wait and see.
Continue teaching, safe travels, and do join us again, Jane. I know it's late where you are. I sure appreciate you staying up for us.
It's been my pleasure, John. Thanks so much.
Jane Kirtley is the director of the Silla Center at the University of Minnesota. I got friends over there, and she's one of them. Let's pause here. We'll do the news on WGN Radio. The Vibe Score segment's got some fun things for you to think about, listen to, and score. And the boys from the beat all coming up on GN.
Back in the days on the boulevard, I landed. We used to kick routines, and the presence was fitting. It was I, the abstract,
and me, the five-footer. I kicks the mad style, so step off the Frankfurter.
Yo, Fife, you remember that routine that we used to make spiffy like Mr. Clean?
A tidbit, a spidgin. I don't get the message, so you got to
okay.
Run the pigeon.
You're on point, Fife.
All the time, Tip.
You're on point, Fife.
All the time, Tip.
You're on point, Fife.
All the time, Tip.
I love that song. I love that song. Griff, why are we featuring that in our Vibe Score segment?
It's bad because news. It's not good news. The second voice you heard there.
I know.
The second voice you heard there was founding member of the of a tribe called Quest. Excuse me, Fife Dog, born Malik Isaac Taylor, and he died last week, and it was terribly sad. At the age of 45, complications from diabetes.
I saw that story. I didn't connect it to that particular song until just now.
Yeah.
I saw the story and thought, oh, what a shame. And I knew the name of the group. I'm not that familiar with their music, but I knew that song. I've always thought that song was so fun. Oh, what a shame.
Yeah, so we put...
I love that song, too.
Hi, Kristen Decker. Yeah, so we put that up as the song to score this week, Griff?
We did, yeah. And it's a new post, so I'm one of the few votes on it so far. It's getting a 98, though. It's a great song.
Really high. I'm very decisive today. I either love stuff or I hate stuff, or score it high or score it low.
Well, I'm going to score this one high. Let's all give it a 98, because that's just fun, and that's
but
too
soon.
But I have
to say, I have a good memory about that song. I don't know if it's good. I just had started working at the station, and I was your intern. And I was making bumps, and Griff at the time made you a CD of like really awesome music. And that was on the CD of bumps, and you wanted the certain part of the rap. Like
I know it.
A microphone or drop the mic or something like that. And you like stood over my shoulder, like meticulously. You're like, no, one more beat. No, one more. You're not quite there yet. But it was such a good song that I didn't mind listening to it over and over and over again. And I probably am a good editor because you were so damn picky.
I am that way about my audio cuts, I'll say that. But I don't remember traumatizing you that way, Kristen. Sorry about that. Griffin, welcome to my world. Or Kristen's, I guess. This is our Vibe Score segment. Vibe Score is one word. It's an app that my cousin and I developed, and we use it on our show. And here's what we ask you to do. Download it. It's free. Vibe Score. Get that app, and then we'll feed you news stories and categories that you select. If you're into music, you'd find that one. If you're into sports, we'll send you stories about sports. At the end, there's always a question where you get to score something. So here we're scoring that song, and as Griffin said, it's doing well. In the TV category, House of Cards and Girls are up. You know why? Because I've been watching a lot of those shows, and I think they're both having really good seasons, and actually the vibe scores are pretty good for them. House of Cards is vibing at a 92, and Girls takes such a... anyway, Girls is getting...
I don't know what the end of that sentence is.
You have to allow the girls to be the girls. You have to allow that cast to be that cast. And if you get too exasperated because they're these narcissistic creatures, then you'll never enjoy the show. And yeah. I'm starting to get over that. And it's funny. God, that show is funny.
I hope at least you're starting. It's season five. If you don't get over it soon, it'll be too late. I felt the same way in the first two seasons. I remember thinking, I was never not going to watch it. I don't know. I was just compelled to watch it from the start. But I didn't like it that much. But I stuck with it, and I don't really know why, because those were really hard to watch. I felt gross after an episode. And
totally.
From season three, now they're in season five. I think it's absolutely hilarious, and I just love it more than ever. I think it's gotten so much better.
And it wasn't hate watching, and it wasn't I'm enjoying this watching. It has been exasperating watching, but now I'm kind of coming around. I'm behind your curve, Griff, but... I'm coming around on it. I think the acting is so good. The writing is so good.
It also used to be more of a dramedy. Now I just think it's really funny. It wasn't as funny before, so now that's what changed for me.
Yeah.
Don't you think Kristen would like it? She has not seen it.
I have not watched it. And here's my question, though, in using the app. So on both the TV questions for House of Cards and Girls, like, I haven't seen either one of those shows. So I voted a 50 for Girls, like, because I'm in the middle, because I don't know if I like it or not.
No.
For House of Cards, I did not vote at all. So should I have not voted at all on Girls?
I think you should do it the way you do on Facebook, where you're watching other people have a conversation, but you don't chime in. I mean, that would be my recommendation, because a 50 on a scale of 1 to 100 is very low. So it's not really the middle. That's actually pulling it down. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So... Yeah, That's my advice to those of you that are chiming in on or watching categories that maybe you don't have an opinion on or don't want to, you know, move the needle one way or another. We asked folks this in the news category about Ted Cruz's comments on going to Muslim neighborhoods to suppress Islamism. That was his word. But Ted Cruz spoke out after what happened in Brussels and said, we've got to do something to push back against extreme Islam in America. And he had this idea about empowering the police. The story is there, but we asked you what you thought of his comments, and a lot of people chimed in on that. 100 is you're completely with Ted Cruz, and 0 is you're not at all. It's currently vibing at a 9.
I'm glad
that's
that you,
a low number.
I'm glad that you cleared up the Islamism thing, because when I read it on the app, I cringed. I was like, someone wrote this wrong. But no, that's what he said.
That's his word. And
oh, wow.
I don't even want to get into that right now. So you can check it out there. By the way, Mark Kirk, our senator, said he's the first Republican senator that I'm aware of to break rank and say that he will interview Merrick Garland for the Supreme Court. Just that, he'll meet with them. And we asked you what you thought about that. 100 is you're with Kirk. Yes, he should do that. And 0 is no, stay the course. We're not going to do this. That's getting an 88. Folks are with the Illinois senator. And I think he sort of knows, you know, he's anticipating that. He wants a good vibe score on this because he wants to get reelected.
He needs a good vibe score.
You know I heard him say that. He said, I really want a good vibe score on this one.
I showed this to the mayor of Minneapolis' staff and some other politicians, and I said, hey, you guys should be on this. And they took one look at it and said, oh, no. We do not want to be scoring stuff for you guys. Okay, in the celebrity category, Pee Wee Herman is back. I saw a cut from the movie, Griff. I think it looks really fun and funny. I'm okay with this. I'm giving Pee-wee coming back a good score.
Okay. The people are not. It's got a 26 right now.
They have not seen the cut then. You know, this is a classic case of you can't separate the character from the guy who used to portray it.
Well, hold on. Not even... Well, Do you mean they can't separate the old Pee-wee from the new Pee-wee? Because it's basically the same character. I don't
know, but
I think
mean,
that much
Paul
has changed.
Rubens.
Oh,
yeah.
Because
I know what
he was a weirdo.
Yeah. And it wasn't that he was a weirdo. He had that one incident, that one time. I love Pee-wee. I scored it like a 98, and I've watched the first half of his new movie. I didn't get the second half watched because I was tired, but I loved it. It was hilarious. It's a great movie. If you loved Pee-wee's Playhouse growing up or if you loved Pee-wee's Big Adventure, you will love this movie.
I sort of missed Pee-wee Herman when I was growing up. I just didn't watch that much, but my girlfriend is a huge, huge fan, so I threw him a 78 on her behalf.
I knew your girlfriend was smart.
In the movies category, we asked you to vibe Batman versus Superman. I love this movie. I think it's really good, and I'm going to give it a good score. I haven't scored on it yet, but I'm going to give it a good number.
Wait.
Now, I should also tell you that I have not yet seen the movie, but that's my hating on the haters. Plus, I like Ben Affleck. And, you know, I don't understand how you can get all bent out of shape about a comic book movie, right? It's a comic book movie. And he said he was trying to be true to the original story. And so they made a movie about it. I'm kind of amazed that people have a lot of pent-up emotion about Batman versus Superman.
Oh,
so
I
think it's because Ben Affleck has been kind of a... I don't think
you can't say that word. I know.
Like a crappy guy recently. So then, when I think of a Batman, I think of like a Daniel Craig or like a a Hugh Jackman. I don't think of like a wussy Ben Affleck.
Well, first of all, Hugh Jackman is Wolverine. Everybody knows that. He can't do both.
I'm just saying, like broad shoulders, like a man, and Ben Affleck is wuss.
Wow. Okay, Griff, a little wisdom here from our movie expert.
None of us have seen it. I mean, I posted it, you know, just to get ahead of everything. I'm sure a lot of people will, and then they'll come score it. Right now, I think there may be one person who saw it and voted, and it's getting a 25, so they weren't crazy about it. I'm with neither of you here, I think. I don't. If people don't like it, they can say so. I don't see anything wrong with that, but... who knows what's going on with Ben Affleck? I hope he makes a comeback.
I'm going to post two of them, and then we got to wrap this segment up. Get ready for the boys from the beat. We'll cross-talk a little sports with them. But I was just writing as the show got started and didn't finish it, Griff. And Kristen, the Nike self-tying shoe. You just hit a little button on the side of each of where the laces are, and it cinches up the top of your shoe so you don't have to tie it. That's either the greatest thing we've ever done or the end of civilization as we know it.
I think it's great because I constantly have to retie my shoes. And so
I don't
save me multiple times bending down to retie my shoes.
Uh-huh. I don't want to be this guy, but I think that's terrible. You should be able to tie your own damn shoe.
I've been saying for years that Velcro is coming back and fashion is cyclical. And this is a step in the right direction, I think.
The shoe looks good. I'll give him that. I didn't know how to pose this question. I'll just ask you guys about it, and then we'll leave it on this. Have you seen the picture of David Letterman this week?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I
so
worried
questions.
For him.
So
he,
many questions.
He looks like a Santa Claus out for a jog. You know who he looks like? Rob Reiner is who he looks like. Look at that face. Somebody showed me a picture. I looked at it for a while. I did not know that was David Letterman.
I mean, that was the one thing that I thought was especially odd about it. It just straight up doesn't look like him at all. Yeah. I don't know. But I did see one reaction to it that I thought was funny. They said, yes, it does look different than we've ever seen David Letterman. He looks happy. And I thought, that actually kind of struck me as true. So I'm like, go forth, David Letterman. I give it an 80.
My question is, and I need it answered. Did David go bald afterwards, or did he have a toupee, or did he have hair plugs? Like, when did he lose his hair?
That was weird, yeah.
That's what my wife asked me, and I don't have an answer to that. All I can think of is the trim, dapper, tall, double-breasted David Letterman with sneakers on that we used to see come out. And then there's this other guy, and I don't even remember the hair now because it's all jumbled for me. I can't relate one to the other.
he had a college shirt on. Did he have a Ball State shirt on?
Yeah, he did. Ball State.
I was like, shout out to his, I think he went there. I know he
No, yeah, he did. Yeah, he did. He's got a scholarship there. That's our Vibe Score segment. We do that on Saturdays about this time. Kristen Decker, thanks for chiming in, my friend. Appreciate you pulling over on the side of the road.
I will not get a cell phone ticket for you.
That's our friend Kristen Decker and producer Griffin chiming in as well. And you can, too. We want you to get the app called Vibe Score. It's one word, V-I-B-E-S-C-O-R-E. You can score and comment on the news. We'll talk with the boys from The Beat about what they've got coming up for you next on WGN. All right, let's get ready and talk to the boys from The Beat. Mark Carmen and Adam Hoge join us on WGN Radio. Hi, fellas. How you doing this afternoon?
Hey, John. Good.
Hi, John.
What's your A topic today? What are you guys going to bust out of the gates with?
We got some big-time guys coming into the studio today, John.
Oh, one of my all-time favorite heroes.
Who would that be?
John McEnroe?
Oh, we're talking to John McEnroe. Actually, we apologize for the promo. McEnroe actually has to go tomorrow, so we'll be but we do have...
He will be on the show tomorrow.
Don't worry. We apologize.
Well, I can listen tomorrow, and I'm sure you're going to have a really good show today.
Johnny Mac, he's the best, isn't he?
He is. I mean, you know what's nice about him? He was a great athlete. He was a polarizing athlete. He didn't care. He won our hearts over. And then he's a really good broadcaster. He and his brother, I think, are both terrific announcers.
And he's got his own academy, and he's trying to help out different people get into the game that maybe perhaps would not normally be there. You know, somebody would be playing soccer or basketball or whatever. He wants to make it more affordable to play tennis, which I think is a really cool way to give back as well.
Nice. Well, that's tomorrow. What about today, then?
So the McDonald's All-American game is here on Monday, and we've got four of the seniors that are playing in it. Anna Wilson, who's Russell Wilson's sister. We've got the number one player in the country in Jason Tatum. We've got a kid by the name of De'Aaron Fox out of Katy, Texas, which is right by Austin, who I think is better than, like, at least 50% of the NBA right now. So I'm kind of geeked out here, John.
They're going to be visiting with you guys?
They're going to be in here in studio.
Wow.
And I don't know if you know Anna Wilson, Russell Wilson's sister, but she's unbelievable at basketball.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I sure know her brother. I guess she's real tall, too, huh?
Think Steph Curry of the women's game. That's what I'm envisioning for her.
Are you guys going to get all of their autographs and then put them in a safe place so that years from now when they really become household names, you'll be able to say, I've got a signed one from 15 that's really worth something now, boy.
That's not a bad idea, John.
I don't know if that's gauche, if that's tacky. I don't know how to. I never got into getting autographs from the guests, but yeah, it might be something to think about.
I mean, it's probably an unprofessional play, but that's not stopped me before.
Exactly.
I actually just kind of want their phone numbers in case they're really famous and maybe they enjoy the interview and someday they'll give us an interview when they wouldn't give it to somebody else. That might be unprofessional as well, but I might have to ask.
Or maybe they're going to need a guy. I mean, they're at the beginning of their careers now. You could be their agent or I don't know what all those people do, but it seems like they've got people and you could be one of their people.
I've always wanted to be someone's people. If I could just
Not that being on WGN is chopped liver. I mean, you know, that's a good thing, too. I mean,
You seem like somebody that would be Jason Tatum's people.
I mean, Tatum, I've done more research on these gentlemen than I should have. I almost feel uncomfortable how much I know about him.
I know. That's weird. It's like, dial it back, Harm. Dial it back. I mean, don't scare the guest.
The guy loves an Emo's Pizza down in St. Louis. He orders it all the time. He has the same exact order. And then 20 minutes later, he calls up. Hey, it's Jay. They're like, okay, we'll have it ready for you. See you in 20. And just comes on over, eats it 4 days a week. Is that creepy that I know that?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm kind of think maybe we should wrap this up now then. All right, so you guys are getting ready to roll. I will talk to you next week, but have a real good show, and we'll catch your McEnroe conversation tomorrow too, fellas.
Thanks, John.
Okay, let's get you ready for the news. That's coming up next on WGN.